argument is Mendez versus Barnett. Ms. Borowski.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Barbara Borowski, counsel for plaintiff appellant Mendez. Mendez meets listing 12.05C, and there is not substantial evidence to support the ALJ's determination otherwise. Clearly, Mendez meets the IQ requirement, and she met it before age 22. There were four IQs taken when Mendez was between the ages of 18 and 20, and on every single one of these tests, Mendez scored a score of 70 or below and at least one portion. Furthermore, Mendez meets the rest of the introductory paragraph of 12.05C because she suffers from adaptive deficits since before the age of 22. This is evidenced by the fact that she was in special education throughout school and only received a certificate of attendance, not a certificate of completion or a diploma. Furthermore, Mendez had multiple pregnancies before commencing at the age of 11, and this shows deficits in social functioning. Lastly, her GAF scores were 40, 50, and 55. These global assessment scores demonstrate deficits in adaptive functioning ranging from moderate to severe impairments to major impairments and in all areas of adaptive functioning, including social, occupational, and school functioning. Mendez also meets the second requirement in that she suffered from an additional mental or physical impairment imposing significant work-related limitations of function. In fact, she only needs either a mental or...
So what is that that you claim she has, that additional physical or mental impairment?
She has both, even though only one is required. The additional mental impairment is that she suffers from depression, anxiety disorder, which was diagnosed by
What's
various...
What's the physical?
The physical impairment she suffers from is weakness and pain in her legs, which was also diagnosed by Dr. Garcia and the state agency physician, which the ALJ purports to rely on, stated that plaintiff could only perform sedentary work, which is an additional significant physical requirement, as significant only means more than slight, according to the Seventh Circuit in Higgins.
But I thought your principal argument here relied on the depression diagnosis, that you're saying that the ALJ's finding that it was just kind of episodic, I guess he calls it episodic and of relatively short duration, is what, just not supported by substantial evidence?
Correct. That is our main focus. She, although she does suffer from physical, the ALJ stated that it was episodic and short in duration. However, she has been experiencing symptoms of depression since age 11 as she first tried to commit suicide at age 11. Furthermore, every doctor in the record acknowledges objective evidence such as blunt responses, frequent tearfulness. Her sister testifies to that, frequent tearfulness. She has a flat affect and a sad mood. She was diagnosed by Dr. Gopal and Dr. DeWolf, which the ALJ credits in the record, as markedly depressed with a history of depression and suicide attempts since age 11.
How severe does this additional thing have to be to meet the listing?
It only requires that it be more than slight, according to Higgins, and it was also implied through Scott versus Barnhart and Blakes versus Barnhart, that the impairment only needs to be more than slight, and the Eighth Circuit in Marish also stated that it only needs to be more than slight.
So is it your argument that, to go back for a moment to the physical problem, that even though this physical problem in another context might be enough to justify a hypothetical to a VE saying sedentary, taken as a fact in itself, it shows that she's got a significant physical, or not significant, use lots of negatives, impairment.
Correct. And as for the mental impairment, the ALJ recognizes at step 5 that the depression would cause her to be limited to low-stress work. That in and of itself is meets step three in that it is an additional work-related impairment limiting her to low stress, and it's caused by the depression, which the ALJ clearly states at step five but does not acknowledge that fact at step three, which seems inconsistent.
What did the ALJ mean when he said her vegetative functions were noted to be markedly disturbed? What does that mean? What are vegetative functions?
Well, the ALJ is quoting Dr. Gopal and Dr. DeWolf when he states that. And they stated that and then concluded that the...
What does it mean, I'm asking you? What are vegetative functions? She's not a vegetable.
Well, those are the functions that one experiences that are involuntary. And in this case, there are certain studies that have been done to show that those kind of functions that you can't
like
really control
what?
Can
your
show...
heartbeat or something, or what?
They don't specify. It could be the fact that she's frustrated or nervous and other things that they state that show that she has the marked depression, which is what they conclude after stating that she has these markedly
but
depressed...
This is a term of art that doctors... vegetative functions. So somebody should have asked for it. Is actually
it is mysterious.
A term of art. I think it means things like sleeping, non-volitional activities, and her sleeping certainly was
that would
quite
be
disturbed.
A depression symptom.
Yeah.
Is there a difference?
And that's why they concluded markedly.
Is there a difference between having what is undisputably a pretty lousy life and depression? Because depression is a disease, and it's not it's exacerbated by certain things, but it's a diagnostic disease. As let's face it, a person that has a baby at 12 and three more before she's 20, a boyfriend who's they're here today, gone tomorrow, does some things for her, and someone who's never worked, I think darn near anybody's going to be depressed or sad or miserable or whatever. Is there a distinction between that unfortunate condition and the disease?
Yes, and she was diagnosed with depression throughout the record. She's also on Zoloft, which is an antidepressant medication, and she was hospitalized for watching her for another attempted suicide so that they could watch her so that she didn't attempt suicide again. And so I believe the diagnosis and the fact that she was on antidepressant medication shows that she actually was diagnosed with impairment, which is different from just having a hard life.
Did the antidepressant medicine do any good?
She still, while was on it, was still markedly depressed, still frequently tearful, still observed to be in a flat mood, and...
It doesn't improve her surroundings, her social, economic, whatever you want to call, marital.
Correct.
The medicine won't improve that.
Correct. And her difficulty with coping with those situations was also exacerbated by the fact that she had a low IQ.
Yeah.
Do you want to save the balance of your time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Borowski. Ms. Cromer?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Kimberly Cromer, and I am here on behalf of the Commissioner for Social Security, Joanne Barnhart. Judge Wood noted today that it appears that the argument has somewhat changed for Ms. Mendez as we're here today.
Well, no, I didn't say that. Please don't.
I'm sorry. The majority. I'm sorry. What I meant to say was that the majority of her brief focused on the 1205C requirements.
Right, and I'm happy to focus on that. I was just musing that, in fact, if the physical impairments, as they're pertinent to step five, have a different significance inside that symptom, there's something interesting there. But I'm happy to focus on the depression. I have to say, it's hard for me to imagine how the commissioner could not have seen these very consistent diagnoses over a long period of time of a serious depression as satisfying that listing.
Well, the ALJ in this case did not ignore the diagnosis of the depression. What he did note was that they were periodic in nature. They seemed to come up on situational factors. They appeared, her depression seemed to kick in situations where she was having disputes with her boyfriend, or there was another situation that popped up where her home was burglarized and she was under a certain amount of stress searching for...
That's his characterization. That's not actually what the doctors said. They didn't say episodic and, you know, controllable. They said she has serious depression.
The physicians, keeping in mind, though, that the ALJ in this case would have had the opportunity to review the record as a whole.
So he gets to re-diagnose because he's reading their treatment notes?
He didn't change the diagnosis. He only looked at that as an consider those diagnoses in making an analysis or looking at the step 2 severity criteria and then looking at it at
step
3.
Step 2, I don't think. I thought it was step 3, whether she had... He blew it on the IQ point. He thought that she didn't meet the IQ criterion. The district court judge understood that that was a mistake. So the question is, did he also fail to appreciate the relevance of these diagnoses at the step 3 phase?
We know that when you look at the state agency reviewing psychologists who considered this record, they recognized, actually it was borderline intellectual functioning, not mental retardation was their diagnosis.
That doesn't matter, though.
As well as the depression in this case. And when they considered the evidence in making a step 3 finding, they did not determine that she met or equaled the listing severity. And the ALJ was more than reasonable in accepting those opinions. So there is no record, there is no evidence from the state agency psychologist in this case.
But he didn't apply that test, did he?
What test, Your Honor?
IQ no higher than 70 plus a mental or physical condition that significantly impairs you, right?
Plaintiff keeps wanting us to go down that 1205 road in this case, but as the ALJ noted that there were...
I don't understand. He didn't apply that test.
No, right? He did not apply that test.
Shouldn't he have applied it?
No, he did not have to apply this test.
Why?
Because there were 4 state agency reviewing psychologists who looked at this record, looked at the IQ scores...
No, I don't understand. That relates to how the test applies, but didn't he have to apply the test?
Well, he...
Right? I mean, shouldn't he say, you know, I have this test, the low IQ plus the significant impairment, whatever the exact wording is, and I find, you know, she doesn't have the... Yeah, so it's a IQ of 60 through 70 and a physical or other mental impairment imposing an additional and significant work-related limitation of function. So isn't that the applicable test, and he should take the test and apply it to... The record? No.
No, Your Honor.
Why isn't it the
You're forgetting
test?
That the regulations specifically clarify that you also need to meet the capsule definition, the prerequisite diagnostic criteria for mental retardation, significance,
and
adaptive function.
No, well, the Eighth Circuit just disagreed with you on that.
I'm sorry, which circuit?
The Eighth, the supplemental authority that we were given in the Marish against Barnhart case.
I'm aware of the Marish case.
Particularly says, and I sort of put a little block around it, this court disagrees with the commissioner that the listing's introductory paragraph requires a formal diagnosis of mental retardation. And so what it says is you have to certainly show that your condition arose before the age of 22, which is there, but there doesn't need to be. So I guess you're asking us to create a conflict with the Eighth Circuit.
No, I am aware of the Marish case. I'm also aware that the commissioner out of the Kansas City office has filed for a petition for rehearing on that matter. So
well,
I don't think that
I don't understand how you'd have a finding of mental retardation required in addition. What if a person's IQ is 60, that person is retarded, isn't he?
No, not automatically. That would be applying the IQ scores mechanically.
I don't understand. What's the difference between mental retardation and having a very low IQ?
The difference between, well, what they need to look at...
I mean, are there brilliant people with a 60 IQ? I don't understand.
Actually, if you look at the DSM-4 on pages 43 and 44 of the DSM-4, it recognizes that you can have individuals who have higher IQ scores but then have low adaptive functioning skills.
No, we're talking about the opposite.
Conversely, the DSM-IV also recognizes that you can have an individual who has lower IQ scores but has a high level of adaptive functioning.
I don't get that. What does that mean? What is adaptive functioning?
Adaptive functioning is defined as evaluating their social skills, their activities of daily living, their ability to maybe seek employment. It is a clinical term. Psychologists will evaluate when they look at claimants.
So a psychologist would not say that a person with an IQ of 60 is mentally retarded?
That wouldn't be the end of his analysis. No, he would have to also and that's why this.
But I don't see what else in this record pushes us in the opposite direction. This woman has a third grade reading level, and that's awfully limited. That's even below, what newspapers and so forth are written at. And there's nothing else in this record to make us think that her adaptive skills would be better than those, I suppose, you would intuitively think for somebody with a 60 to 70 IQ. There's nothing, no testimony, certainly, if we look at what she does, what she's able to do, the misleading account of her high school experience in the ALJ's opinion, which makes you think she got a high school diploma of some kind, but in fact it says she sat in the room for the right number of years.
I can actually point to some record evidence to answer that question, though. When we look at Dr. Shipley, who was the first state agency reviewing psychologist who was in the record, that's going to be Exhibit 4 in the transcript, he makes a notation that he's ultimately concluded that Ms. Mendez is functioning in the borderline intellectual range despite her scores because she has high activities of daily living. We also have state agency reviewing psychologist Dr. Presner. And when you look at this record exhibit, there's a dialogue between Dr. Presner at Exhibit 10 and then with one of the claims representative in this file. And Dr. Presner specifically says, we need to go back and look at this record and try and obtain some, more information on her activities and get some testimony and statements from that. The claims representative attempts to reach a social worker is unsuccessful, but then does contact one of her learning teacher. And when you look at Exhibit 3 in the file from social worker Dickerson, they engage in a telephone conversation, and it's specifically geared towards asking, what happens in her daily life. She testifies that she cares. At that point, she had three children. She gets up at 5 or 6.
Well, we've cautioned against transferring information about people's ability to function at home into the workplace. They're very different. Much more time flexibility at home. And the other thing is, if you have children, you have to try to take care of them, even if you're in pretty bad shape. Otherwise, you lose the children, right?
So. Right. But this is why the agency attempted to engage in a dialogue to try and figure out what was happening.
His discussion was so casual. This business that she's evasive, she appears evasive. I mean, she's obviously has very limited intellectual abilities along with a psychiatric problem. So you wouldn't expect her to be an impressive witness.
When actually there are comments in the record from the state agency, the consulting physicians, Dr. Goebel and Dr. Wolf, who recognized that she was coherent, she was oriented, she was able to understand questions. It's also consistent with the ALJ's own experience at hearing. He asked her numerous questions. She was able to respond on them, but this circuit has recognized that ALJs, are observing these claimants at hearing and are given deference in their characterization of their demeanor.
Let me ask one other question, since your time has expired. I'll interrupt you. What exactly did the administrative law judge ask the vocational expert, or what did he tell her about Mendez's condition?
Well, We have to say that the vocational expert was present for the testimony as well. He actually submitted, I believe it was two or three hypothetical questions to the vocational expert, asking to consider the RFC that was posed was for simple one and two type step repetitive type work with low concentration and work that was low stress. And the VE also would have been present for the testimony regarding, you know, this dialogue about the hospitalization and that she was hospitalized for 3 weeks, but then, as we know in the record, this didn't develop.
What would be an example of such a job?
Well, the VE responded to the hypothetical question that was ultimately adopted by the ALJ, responded saying that she retained the ability to perform work as a cleaner, a packer, and a materials handler.
Packer? What's a packer?
Packer. I don't have the dot actually in front of me, but I guess I would envision somebody picking up items and with a light level, it'd be work 10 to 10 pounds or so, lifting those objects, placing them in a box and sealing them, maybe putting cushioning around fragile items or something of that nature. That would be a packer.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Cromer.
Thank you.
Ms. Borowski, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
First, I would just like to briefly address one more point on listing 12.5C, and then I'd like to address the step 5, which she was just referring to.
So why can't she be a packer or a cleaner, right? These are very modest jobs.
Well, first, the ALJ states that she credited the state agency doctor who found that she could only perform work at the sedentary level, and then goes around and in her decision states that she can perform work at the light level. So physically, according to who the ALJ credits, which is a state agency physician, she would not be able to perform these jobs. The ALJ in stating that she can perform light work is playing doctor.
But some packing is sedentary, isn't it?
That's not one of the jobs that the vocational expert testified that she could perform when questioned at the sedentary level. In fact, when questioned at the sedentary level, the vocational expert was quite indecisive and did not really even state jobs which the person could perform. She said with the mental impairments the ALJ listed and being at sedentary, it would be quite difficult for her to list any jobs. And then she tries to name some, but then says, I'm not sure about low concentration or low stress in some of these, and this does not meet this commissioner's burden at step 5.
How old are her children now?
Her children currently, three of them are in the school age, and then one of them is approximately 2 at this point.
How old is she? I guess that's...
She is... she was 22 at the hearing. She's 24 currently.
24. So her youngest is about 12. Oldest is about 12. And the others are younger. And she's the primary caregiver, I presume.
Well, she stated that her mother helps her with her children, and also her boyfriend, who lived with her on and off. I'm not sure at this point whether he's living with her or not. Helped with the children when he came back from work. So she did have assistance, and she stated that she might change diapers, but she has difficulty with feeding them because she feels as though that when she's feeding them, she doesn't know when to stop and they might choke. So while she assists with the care of her children, it seems as though she may not be considered the primary caregiver, as her mother and the father of her children is around to help.
And that is the father of those children, that this guy?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Borowski.
Thank you.
Cromer?